Hello and welcome to Royale Without Cheese, our bi-weekly podcast in which we discuss both the classic and the unknown of art and popular cinema from the then and now. We are your hosts, me, Miguel Aide, Leonardo Miranda.
Hello.
Hello, hello, and Tomás Ferreira.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hi there.
Bonjour.
As part of our award season segment, we'll be looking at the likely contenders for the 2024 Oscars. Today, we talk about Anatomy of a Fall. But before any ado, don't forget to subscribe, leave a comment, or simply give us a like. Anatomy of a Fall is a 2023 French drama thriller directed by Justine Triet and co-written with Arthur Harari. The film stars Sandra Hüller as a writer trying to prove her innocence in her husband's death. Premiering at Cannes Film Festival, where it won the Palme d'Or, it received wide critical acclaim, winning 2 Golden Globes and being nominated for 7 awards at the BAFTA and 5 at the Academy Awards. Though bloody, this was indeed a mighty fall into praise and glory. But was it all true and well-deserved? Well, Royale Without Cheese comes to give its final verdict. Fellas, what do we say to this film?
It's a solid film. I liked it. You know, enjoyed it. Thought it had some interesting ideas.
Like,
yeah. You know, this is the difference. I liked it. I didn't really like it. So that's where I'm at. Just
is it
putting
a,
what
is
I
it
am.
3.5 stars or 4 stars? Come on.
Yeah. No. It's a 4 star. It's a 4 star. It's solid.
Then you really liked it.
Then you
really liked it.
You know why? Because I think it takes an interesting... It doesn't matter. You know, what am I saying?
Just
I'm not
stars.
A critic.
Just stars.
I think the reason why I find it's a very solid film, it's interesting because it introduces another perspective over these court procedural films, or let's say these thriller dramas, where it's not much about the ambiguity of the guilt/innocence of the victim. I mean, of the victim, of the accused, in this case, the mother. Normally in these drama thrillers where a family is threatened by, you know, an accusation, somebody in the family is the accused, and that this process of the trial is going to hurt them because the truth is going to be unearthed. Normally it's about the son, the father, the husband, you know, starting to become suspicious. And that happens in the film fairly, yes, you know, it's indeed a big piece of it. But the central dramatic core in those films is about that relationship deteriorating and there being a doubt at the end, you know, is she guilty? Is she innocent? Even if she doesn't go to jail, you know, the question of, oh, is she guilty? Is she innocent? What is it? Am I safe at home? You know, those kind of questions really turn around, you know, the accused. But here it's not about whether the mother is innocent or not, because frankly, I am from the very beginning very sure by the calmness of the character, by how collected she is, by how the things are pieced together, that she is innocent. This is one rare film where I don't feel a morality ambiguity in her innocence. At times I do, there's space for that, but I don't feel like that's the main core. For me, where the film is interesting is that it points the angle of observation towards something else, which is how unbiased can the system be? And it's a little bit similar to what happens in a series called The Night Of, which me and Mike have seen. I liked it very much. Mike was the one who recommended it to me. And by the way, Steve Zaillian is making a new series called not The Talented Mr. Ripley, but based on that. So I'm very looking forward to see that one. But anyway, in this film, Anatomy of a Fall, is much to do with how unbiased are these proceedings of the court proceedings, the police proceedings around finding the truth, unearthing it, who is the culprit, was it a murder, was it a suicide, beneficial. And this is where the contrast comes that is interesting, because on the one hand, as we witness this happening, this court procedural, and when it becomes really interesting when the court comes in, it takes more than a year, and that is really emotional. I found myself feeling like fingers were being poked inside me. I felt really bad for this mother and son privacy being torn apart, because this film is really about those few in a family where a culprit is not to be seen. No one is the culprit, but unfortunately these proceedings must take place to find who he is. And so what do you have is people who are traumatized by a very unfortunate thing being questioned, like some kind of Orwellian, you know, Kafkaesque inquiry, where what's the point? Lynchian. Where is this gonna end? You know, and you feel really bad for it. And I think my brain is going like really up because I'm really afraid of bureaucracy. That's why I feel so emotional. Whenever, you know, I read the trial, not entirely when I was younger, and I couldn't because I was getting anxiety from reading it.
You've told me.
I'm really, it gets really fucked up. I cannot read that stuff because I feel really nervous. And so seeing this film, where I got an emotional response and where I give it the 4 stars is because of that. Because there is this lovely ambiguity. And this, I think, is where the film gets its uniqueness between, yes, on the one hand, has a citizen who is born in a civilized society, you know of courts, you know these proceedings must take place, you know that forensics must take place, you know that these proceedings must take place, you know that there is a doubt regarding how inconclusive was the cause of death in this man, so now we need to track down, was there a murder, was it a suicide? But then again, it feels like the lives of these people, the private lives, are being shattered, and, you know, how beneficial is really the process, really, with the exceptions when there is no culprit? And I find that very fascinating in the film. And that is really where the filmmaking is bold and is provocative. It tries to provoke its audience with these questions. There are lovely moments in the court scene where you have Daniel, the son, being interrogated by the two lawyers. And you really feel these questions that are central to the film. You have this panning camera that goes from the defense lawyer to the accusation lawyer. And he's the focus of the situation. We never see the lawyers, they're off frame. But this idea of play with what is off frame, their voices, and him in the middle, visually, you are feeling it. He's the victim of all these words, all this inquiry, how stressful it is. And I was so annoyed at the accusation lawyer, like dressed in red, how he's arrogant, blunt, horrible, how subjective he is at the end of everything. I mean, how dare you? You know, because in the end, you really see how these people, the judge included, in being so subjective and trying to put an opinion, you know, that is so degrading to the people that are being interrogated, you know, that at the end of the day, these people, you know, it's amazing how, you know, in movies, you often do trust, if there's a murder happening, you do trust the protagonist or the supporting characters who are the FBI, who are the police, who are the court, because they are the agents of good, you know, in this society, they are going to find the truth. But here she's much more the director. Justine is much more inquiring, this idea that there are people as well, and you can see through them and see that, you know, this guy, this accusation lawyer, is thinking about being a good lawyer. This judge is thinking about being a good judge. When is my next promotion? So much so that he even says during the trial, that's why they pay me to do this job. So just, he hears that comment. So you see through these, the seams of this whole, you know, paraphernality system, these proceedings, these functions, and, you know, you cease to trust it and the cruelty of it, how to go to try and find the truth. There's this whole,
yeah, you get a sense much, of, you know, you get a sense of or rather that you know, the only side that wins is the side that has the better lawyers and the better people.
Exactly.
There's this sense of not entirely being about the truth, but about being able to undermine the other parts and how to do it better. And it is kind of scary to think about it that way, especially when you consider this specific case and the fact that potentially this person is innocent and could go to jail for it. So yeah, I do agree. It's a little unnerving to see someone so blunt and arrogant as well in something that is so, you know, potentially consequential for the protagonist.
Yeah, I think it's very impressive how, and I watched another film of hers that also deals with a similar question. It's called Victoria. It's about, like, she clearly has a deep interest in, like, in the apparatus of the, like, of the trial and of the tribunal, which I think is very interesting, because she takes that approach that you're talking about of questioning the place, questioning the people around it. And I think that's what I was so fascinated by. It's, I think the film really makes it clear how, or makes you think about the fact that, like, once what matters more here is that, like, one side is paid to accuse, so all they do is accuse and focus on what can they do to make the accusation stick,
and the other side has to defend it. They have to do all they can do to make the defense stick. The truth doesn't really matter. And like, even the defense lawyer says, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, I don't believe you, but I have to defend you in a way. Like, he states that almost, which is, you know, it makes things complicated, because I do believe that she didn't do it. It does seem pretty, I trust the protagonist. It doesn't seem like she would do that. But at the same time, it's like, she could have done it. I don't know. Like, I don't, we don't have the possibility to really know it. Like, that's the thing about the case, the specifics of the case, is that it's kind of very difficult to tell. You kind of have to, either you believe it or not.
I mean, make your own decision.
Yeah, exactly.
I read that that Justine asked Sandra Hüller to play her as innocent, even though she didn't actually tell her whether she was innocent or not. But at the very least, you do get that sense of she's portraying an innocent person. But whether she's really innocent or just lying so compulsively just that she believes it, it's, you know, obviously you can always give room to interpretation. But I also think that she's innocent.
Yeah,
and I think that's the beauty of it, is that, I mean, she expresses it in the scene, in the courtroom scene, one of these scenes, that things are complicated, that relationships are much deeper than that, and I think that's the kind of the beauty of the film, is that there's something going on in relationships that exists for a long time that you can't really quite just casually explain to a group of people in a courtroom. And it's very easy to misunderstand things and to make a case for something that then isn't true. And I think that sort of mystery of relationships is dealt with very, very interestingly, I think. And it kind of makes you wonder that really it's always about the quality of the lawyers, because the truth is so elusive. I mean, what exactly is going on in relationships? So how are they dealing with each other? How much do they love each other? I mean, it's so unknowable. It's a sad film as well, because I mean, the fact that it leans more and more towards the fact that he killed himself is kind of
that revelations. Well, I don't know, I call a revelation film the scene. Well, it's a revelation scene where he has that talk with the father in the car. It's very emotional, particularly because there's no voice of the father. It's played as a memory, and the voice of the kid, I think, is in the mouth of the father. So that makes it particularly emotional. That little choice was very interesting.
And I think it's also more tragic, because the two possibilities are always either an accident or murder. And it's really only at the end that you get a sense that it may have been suicide. So the fact that it reveals that's the revelation, that's what probably happened, kind of takes you away, because you don't really expect there to have been so much drama between them that could have signified him wanting to kill himself. And then that scene, as you said, I mean, the fact that he hints that he's going to do it, it's very emotional.
Yeah. And I think also it's sad because, like, the kid is having sort of a revelation or, like, an understanding of his father that is much more profound. Something, you know, he's a kid, he's growing up essentially now, coming across something that is very adult, problems with his parents, the fact that the father killed himself. But he's doing it through, like, this whole spectacle of the trial. And so it's like, it's a complicated feeling, because you feel like this kid growing, like his growth is sort of forced on him. Like, you have to do this in order for, you know, for the case to be solved. And so I think it's also, for me, it was emotional in that sense. I think that's why it's very powerful that she takes that choice, that you hear his words and you see the image from the past, but you know, it's, there's that, the present in the past, and it's superimposed on it. I think it's very, very beautiful. And I think the filmmaking is very playful, and I really liked it. I guess I have an idea of what a trial film normally is. Maybe it's wrong, but usually I feel like it's very stern and, don't say that, objection, mister. It's a lot more. It's like, I think it's the filmmaking, your honor, objection, and the filmmaking very stern. But I feel like here there's lots of funny little moments with the camera, little zooms that she does, that I think are very unexpected at times, like playful also in that sense of picking up different perspectives. You have the newsreel perspective. Sometimes you have those cameras that the lawyers use, and certainly it's video. So, and think it makes for the feeling of this being like theatrical, in terms of the film is about the theatrics of the trial of the marriage, and how, you know, like one bad argument can suddenly incriminate you, but you don't know, like, we don't know the rest. So I think the film really is so finely tuned to everything. It makes so much sense the way she approaches it.
Yeah, and the dialogues as well in the courtroom. I think, unlike those sort of films where that you described, you know, the lawyers make sort of quips and little comments, but that there aren't those obvious like objection things, and just, you know, casual comments that they throw that in this film really do seem like things that would happen in normal courtroom scenes. So yeah, it feels very authentic, I think, in just another aspect that brings that to life.
It's almost like there are no big dramatic moments in court, and yet there are dramatic moments, I think, of so casual that it is. You know, in these films, you normally have, like, objection, Your Honor, and a sweeping camera.
You can't handle the truth. From down to up.
You can handle the truth. Who's going to protect this country? This country's walls. Anyway.
If this would have been like one of those directors in that scene where it's revealed that the kid wants to say something else, it would have been like a sweeping shot to the
Your
judge.
Honor!
The judge takes her glasses off. What?
You can just compare also the Killers of the Flower Moon court scene, you know, but that's very signature Marty with the sweeping camera shots, and, you know, just, you can see the low angle shot of Brendan Fraser rising
but
up above.
But it's not a trial
dumb
film.
Boy!
It's not a trial film, so it's the
it's not a trial film.
So
it like becomes
dynamic.
It's not a trial film. Yeah, true. And also what's so interesting is that, you know, in these type of films, the warmth that is associated to a family and the togetherness and the closeness of these individuals as mother, father, son, gets bended, twisted, destroyed, and hurt as more questions are done to unearth that truth. And sometimes the kid, you know, in particular is the vulnerable part, because he's going to hear arguments and things that he didn't know, and it's going to be very hard for him to understand. So it's interesting that once you put a third person perspective, an outsider perspective of these cops and lawyers and whatnot, these agents, of what happens within a family, every defect, every argument is going to be exposed. What was once private becomes gutted out public and gets misinterpreted. So it's interesting that, for example, the role of wife very quickly in a different context becomes killer. You know, there is a conversation that his lawyer has with her where, well, you being the wife, and there's a silence, it's almost like you're, you know, naturally you're the first suspect, because there's a preconception of passionate or passional crime. So it's almost like you enter this other border, this other realm of where this system of people, this group, family, gains other roles, other meaning. You immediately are, you have your suspects, and this wife, who is supposed to be the loving, the caring, not the partner in a marriage, becomes the prime suspect. So it's very cruel. It's very clinical. It's very objective. It shows no remorse for who it's looking at, you know, the system. And the contradictions of it is that we want it to be that way. We want justice to be blind, but sometimes, you know, it hurts when you know, when you are the insider and you are with the characters and you can clearly see, or your innermost feelings is that she is innocent. You know, you are moving more towards that than anything. So yeah, it hurts that way. I find very interesting that the argument between Sandra and the husband Samuel, we see it, you know, we have it play as an audio, but then we actually see it. I think the director must have thought that an audience couldn't endure, you know, seeing it only through audio. And actually, I mean, it couldn't. I mean, impossible to have just audio play out. And I think it's also something that allows Samuel to appear as a person, living, breathing flesh, not just a body in our heads. So we can understand a little bit more of his personality. And I think, and it really takes, it's fun how you take sides in that argument to figure out who is right and who is wrong. There's a level here of trying to find, did she really actually kill him? Did she have motives? But at the same time, you're thinking in the sense of, did he kill himself? I mean, I do finish the whole thing thinking that yes, she has defects. Yes, she's not perfect. She might very well be the thing that he says that she's cold, and she could actually share helping the load of things. But also, as far as what I believe, you did this to yourself. You know, I think he is very much what the lawyer says. You know, he is frustrated, he's envious because she takes the upper hand as a writer and he doesn't. But the thing is, oftentimes, at least as far as what the character says, and I believe her, is that he had the initial idea for the novel, but he allowed her to take it up and do something with it. He's the one who is left behind, so I think he's also flawed. She may be cold, yes, she may perhaps have a decent relationship with her son. She could have done more, she could have shared a load, but I think he has big problems, and ultimately he was the one taking his own life because of said problems. I wasn't very, you know, I wasn't enamored by her as a person. I think if I met him, I would be like, man, no. I disliked him a little bit, you know. I don't know how you felt about just, him as a character.
No, for me, it was just, I felt sorry for him, honestly.
You felt sorry? Yeah.
Yeah, because it just, from that argument scene, I think it's very well acted.
I definitely felt sorry for him, but at the same time, I disliked him, you know, and that just, I thought, why are you saying these things to her, you know, just making her feel these things so pathetic. I mean, I don't know. I was very annoyed.
Because you get a sense that he's very, a very sad man.
Insecure.
And so, yes, insecure as well. And so when he does this accusation, it kind of seems like despair, like he has nothing else to do, so he just comes at her. And for me, that was sad because it's something that they say. That argument was kind of like a despaired person sort of not being able to go any further. And it was very well acted on both parts. And I think the fact that they showed the scene also made for a bigger impact when they switched again to the audio, because you get a sense that was what they were hearing. So, you know, what that must have been like for them in the courtroom, just listening to all that.
And there's also the added, you know, dialogue between what the actual people who experienced the event know in their heads, and we have access to that. And then you go back to the audience in the courtroom and you have that dissonance between what the people who never saw these people actually being in the room in this moment are experiencing. It's totally different languages of the same event. So I think that's very interesting. And then, of course, ultimately, it works better for when you have that, it develops that final moment, that final blow when the son actually realizes the possibility of him having killed himself. And we see that other memory of the father in the car, which is very sad. Of course, him talking about himself through the dog. I think it adds to that, that idea of the desperate man. Yeah.
This French film made me want to go check out that 50 Cent music that they play in the beginning.
Very good. Very
that was
good.
Surprising.
I was very surprised when I heard it. I was like,
yeah,
the 50 Cent song?
The rap expert here.
Yeah. No, not at all. But I mean, it's a popular song and I hadn't heard it in years.
You hadn't heard it.
I hadn't heard it in years, and then it was like it was only instrumental. I was expecting him to start singing.
I was complete layman listening to it when he came out. I was like, I don't know what this song is, but it's very annoying.
But
it was like
but it fits.
A
Hawaiian it fits.
And
it strangely
like,
fits.
Yeah, it adds
like,
to the
like,
playful nature
hell.
of the film.
Yeah.
I think really
and,
nice.
And the way to use the music as well, you know, it's annoyingly playful with that semi Hawaiian feel to it, kind of you're on a holiday. And then of course when he finds the body, there's this beautiful, you know, one type of instrument of narrative that is often used, which is the dissonance between what is actually happening and the nature of the music. It's a very happy music, and then you have the son finding out the body and his music going in the back. It's awful, it's horrifying, it intensifies the horrible feeling of the moment. I think
the dog performance.
That's
horrifying.
How? I couldn't watch that
yeah,
scene.
Yeah.
Well, say,
when,
yeah,
when he was throwing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
How
when
did
he,
not
like,
just
with the tongue out as well. Oh,
sorry,
my God.
I could not watch that scene. I jumped over. I could not watch that scene. I was like, please don't do this to me. It's worse for me watching animals getting hurt than people getting hurt.
I said to myself, like, I'm going to turn this movie off if he dies. I love the film, but I can't continue. Like, if he dies, that's horrible. Because the dog is so committed to it as well. Like when he pulls through, starts puking.
But I mean, how did they
the
do
eye
this?
Going over
is, he,
the side,
is he actually sort of dog acting?
He is dog acting, I think.
Yeah.
The dog's name is Messi, by the way. Yeah, I don't know if you saw in the credits. Yeah, Messi. Right.
But really, do they really do that? I find it so. I guess you can train.
I mean, it can only be, but I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea. But it feels very real. That's what I'm going to say.
I don't think in. I doubt I that they would be able to get away with torturing a dog in God's year 2024.
Yeah, it's true.
The westerns of the 40s with the horses. I think it was easier back then. I think it's probably a very well-trained dog.
I can imagine.
How do you teach a dog to fake die?
I don't know.
That's like first day paw, second day fake dive. fake to swallow pills and die.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's like, you know, they play dead. Every dog plays dead. That's like a given, but some are like Oscar-nominated play dead. Others are just, you know...
This
amateur
dog should
play
get an Oscar nomination.
Best dog. Yeah,
completely.
Very good.
I was so annoyed at the kid at that moment because I didn't know what he was trying to do. So I was like, you fucking kid. I was like yelling at the screen like, what the fuck are you doing? I was just so annoyed.
And the kid is also very good.
Still.
Yeah, the kid.
Yeah. I do feel like I cut him some slack because I get it. You know, he had the accident. He needed to grow up fast with that blindness thing, but at the same time I feel like his voice is the same voice as the adults, you know. He's super mature for his age, like more than super mature for what a kid can be, so at times I'm a little bit kind of in awe, kind of like, I mean, is this kind of natural? He talks as if he was 40, and I'm
for
like,
me it's like he's French, so I don't even like every French person sounds like they're
I mean, I was like, this is not how a kid speaks, but the film is so good that I can kind of forgive it. So like,
yeah, that's I thought that when he gave that sort of speech thing at the courtroom, but honestly,
any other moments,
I didn't
like,
even notice.
I was like,
but the thing is, he went through so much. It kind of makes you think, it might be more
if I was a kid. If I was a kid, I was snorting and sneezing and crying all over. I couldn't contain myself. I don't see my kid version being as strong as this kid. This kid is like, strong, you know.
But he has been through a lot. Like, that's
true. So that's why I cut him some slack, you know. Like, okay, fine, I can go with it. I can roll along. But yeah, that's my only thing.
Not even talking about the actual accident that put him blind. So I mean,
yeah, plus seeing his dad like literally dead in front of him, and then like going through a whole year relieving relieving that event and everything around it a million times, you know. But I makes sense. It's not the worst.
That's where really the film started kicking in for me, when it really became emotional, was the court and the repetition process of being constantly asked and harassed. I call it harassment, you know, this procedure. Because it's really what you said, and this is a sentence also a line in the Night Of series, is that doesn't matter the truth. This is a thing that John Turturro says to the accused. I don't remember the character name anymore, but it is, doesn't matter the truth. What is being discussed is narratives, is stories. Who wins is the one who gets the best argument, the more eloquent, the more snappy, the best evidence, you know. And but you should, you know, it feels like you're watching magicians at play in a way, you know. You see all these experts coming in, but you need to be constantly reminded that no matter what the projections, the reenactments that they show, these are all always people, outsiders, mind you, saying it's probable that it's probable or improbable, possible, improbable. Okay, so then it's like, what if, you know, if his head was tilted 80 degrees, you know, there's always a what if, it's possible, could happen. So it could, you always need to see from that length. And it's cool because they all always phrase it that way, the possibility terms, because they weren't there. But then it's cool because they speak in such assured terms, the psychologist, the other expert, to their faces. There are moments of actual discussion, and it's really gut-wrenching. It's really that psychiatrist
thought,
talking to her like if
yeah,
you
the psychiatrist
so annoying,
was most,
so annoying.
One of the most,
I mean,
like, because he's speaking in such certain. You never said that to me, and it's like, but don't you see the irony? Like, of
yeah,
course, he didn't
he
say
is
it
an
to
unstable
you,
man.
But you don't know
you
that.
Know? He's feeling of being insulted, like he is suddenly within the family. Like, fuck off! You know, it's just so annoying, so annoying.
Yeah, but that's like another example of how, you know, no matter how many people around you know you, there's something sort of inexplainable within the couple. It's kind of like, yeah, not even a therapist will probably be able to explain it, because just something that couples go through, I guess.
Yeah. And especially a therapist that only spoke to one of the people, like only spoke to the husband, really. Like, it wasn't a couple's therapy even. It was just he was depressed and was talking to him. So it's like, that's why.
So it's amazingly interesting to see someone who is an outsider. I've never seen the man in his life. Maybe I heard him mention in the kitchen once in a while, oh, I went to psychiatrist today, and suddenly this guy I never had any contact with comes into my life and talks about my life. You know, it was so annoying. You know, I felt so much beside her. It was like so, you know, because she speaks with such calm and certainty, and I really believe that she's innocent. I think she's a terrific actress in this film.
The question of language, like she's speaking, the fact that she speaks English at times, and there's that clash of language,
like,
is very
only
interesting.
Digging her own grave, because she becomes progressively more, as soon as she says, could I speak in English, more and more she's reverting back to that. She doesn't ever revert back to French. Oh, and it's such an interesting argument point when she has to fight with the husband, that she talks about those territorial terms, you know. Yeah. English is a midway term. Why the fucking talking French, you know? I feel so, I'm kind of with her, you know, because I don't know. I would be the more cold person in my spot of of the couple, I think. So I very easily side with her. Whenever she talks about conceding things, you know, I think I'm biased with her and her kind of cold views, but I also understand that she may be flawed and she could share things. So it's very interesting to see language used as that thing, you know. She's being so, I just think she's, oh my God, so, you don't even speak French. You don't even speak French, you know, I don't speak French. It's a middle language, you fucker. Like, that's so
no, rough. And the interesting thing is, they're both right in a lot of arguments. Yeah, that's the kind of... The complicated thing is that, yeah, it's true, the language thing, but they did go to his hometown. There's a lot of things that they have both conceded, and they're both right on a lot of things. You see that argument scene, and you side with both of them at different times.
Yeah, it's true in general.
That's the complicated complication.
And I thought this is what the thing I was gonna say just a while ago is that the discussion about the creative process of like him wanting to be a writer, she being a successful writer, I think also added a very interesting dimension to the conflict of the couple, and like of what that dynamic is like, and also paints like adds another layer to the possible, like what is contributing to his depression and his possible suicidal feeling, like he can't live up to her and he can't write, he's not good enough. I think it's a film that I didn't expect to go, like, to have that aspect too, like the creation artists. And it explores it pretty well, yeah. I think it does pretty well.
And even then she defends him, because the lawyer says, you know, he was a coward, she is the victorious. And when he goes back to the stand, she says he wasn't like that. You see that little whisper, so that's interesting to see from her.
And even the fact that she states multiple times, I think in the first half of the film, that she doesn't believe he killed himself. It's also kind of sad, you know. She constantly says that to her lawyer friend. Yeah, but I don't think he did it. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. You go through all of those problems, and you still believe that the person wouldn't do this sort of thing. And I think it speaks more to her innocence once again than the opposite.
And then there's also another layer in this web of relationships where the lawyer, you can clearly see there is a past relationship there, you're always afraid that this is going to somehow turn up into an affair. Let's say the man has died, her husband, but that there's something going to sprout from there. And there's a lot of suggestion, a lot of provocation, especially coming from him. At a certain point, when you are drunk, you fear that that is going to develop, and you wonder, is this a good decision for the film to go? And in fact, in an original draft of the script, they were going to have a sex scene, them two, the lawyer and her. But I don't know if that would be a good route. I don't know if it would be, if it would not be. But I think, I don't know, I just like that she stayed that way. I mean, she was already a complicated character. She was cold in that argument. You see her good side, her bad side, you know, that she's not perfect. Should we add to that, you know, the affair with the lawyer? I don't know. What you guys think about it, should that have taken place? I think it's interesting that it almost happens, but it never happens.
No, yeah, I completely think it shouldn't have been included.
Because somehow, I'm glad it didn't. we would have sided against the character, I think, that if she had done that somehow. I feel
the film really nails, I think, the her characterization. So I really don't think it would have been necessary. I mean, she's complicated as she is. She's clearly flawed, clearly someone you can root for and also be against. And I think it would just add a layer of mystery and intrigue that the film didn't need. And then it's like, is that going to be important in the courtroom? Is that going to make us think that she actually did it to be with him? It just would add layers of unnecessary layers.
Exactly.
So it would feel like forced, trying to create ambiguity in the character, but in a very obvious first way, I think is unnecessary because there's so much tension between them already, like in the way they interact, that I think it's good to maintain a certain distance between them that isn't resolved with a sex scene. Like, then it's like you're giving away all the cards. The tension is the point. It's what makes it more interesting, especially then towards the end when they're drinking and like she leans onto him. I think the way it is good, especially because I don't know, like I don't feel like a sexual exploration of the character in the present is that relevant. Like, what's more important is the past, like in the trial. It's her bisexuality, her having these affairs with one affair supposedly with one woman. I think if you add the lawyer, then it's like, okay, it's too much. Like, let's focus on the tension between them and on discussing the past. I think it was a good decision to not include it, but I like them together. The lawyer is like a very beautiful French man, like a very classic French guy.
Yeah. This was an IndieWire post where I discovered this little detail about one of the drafts of the script, and one of the people that commented said, "She should have fucked him. He is beautiful." I would have fucked him in a heartbeat. That's what they said. Yeah, I mean, he had those very strange eyes, you know, he had the mysterious face.
The French.
Always perfect, always wavy.
Smoking, classic guy.
And it's interesting, you know, in regards to her being bisexual and all and whatnot. It's interesting that the film is going to unveil itself as time goes by regarding its exposition. What things do we know? What things do we take for granted about this family? And what we don't know. One of the things is her bisexuality, and one of the scenes that we see early on. In the opening scene of the film, I think there's some irony when the opening shot is that Paul falling off from the stairs. He immediately goes to the word shoot, you know, falling. Anatomy of a Fall, you have the ball going down the stairs and the dog catches it, looks at the camera. You see the very key to solving this whole mystery is a dog. So I find there's some foreshadowing irony play there. And you have these kind of a three-act play where you have one scene focus where you have this interview taking place between Sandra and creative writing student, and you can see the sexual tension play there, you know, and you're already wondering, where is this gonna go? You know, she doesn't want to be interviewed, but she wants to interview her. She starts making questions about the interviewer, so the interviewee doesn't get any questions. So you really feel like there's a curiosity there. She laughs, there's wine. You already feel that this might be used later, and it is. And then this is intercut. The fact that we are watching a film that runs in between the lines of drama and political thriller, and it's intercut this scene of an interview, which already has sexual tension in it, or the suggestion of it, it's intercut with a blind boy, you know, giving a bath to his dog, and he's pulling him, yet by the collar, there's an exertion of force there. You feel like, what is going to happen? What is going to happen? You know, you already have, as an audience member, the idea of, when is the killing going to happen? So every little bit that you see, just the mechanism of the film language here is already creating a certain kind of tension to where is the victim, where is the murder, where is the act of killing or violence. And you see these just at the level of the editing and the mechanics of it, you really feel a tension of violence and not good going on with the dog being brought to the water. And you feel, oh, what's going to happen to that dog? You know, inside of yourself, you are thinking, what's going to happen? And then suddenly that third element of the music, you feel like the tension is being broke off.
Yeah. I think the music, despite being sort of fun, I think it really is kind of scary in that moment because it's
Oh yeah, definitely.
Kind of the problem is that it's so loud. Yeah.
it's a ghost. Who is this guy that we don't see that is off screen? And then when it all ends and she goes away, the interviewer, she goes upstairs and fades away. We then cut to the boy going out with the dog, and suddenly the father, who we never see up until then, is there on the ground and the music's still playing. I think it's a lovely, like, circular movement of the narrative back to the one person we don't see, but only through the music.
And Sandra Hüller is nominated as well.
Oh, yeah. Ah, well, I don't know if she's
well
gonna
deserved.
Win,
but, yeah, well deserved.
But deserves, yes.
And she also stars in The Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
True. Which I'm very eager to watch.
Fire.
Good year for Sandra. I mean, yeah, she probably won't win, but honestly, I think she deserved it.
Yes. Very good performance. I mean,
yeah. For me, yeah. Now that I think of it, probably between her and Lily Gladstone would be fair. Either way, I wouldn't be shocked. But yeah.
And it's not like giving to a German actress wouldn't be also kind of perhaps a first. I don't know.
It's an unexpected film. Not an expected, but sort of weird. I feel like a French production like this, as like from Justine Triet, like she's not properly like a well-established filmmaker, that it got so much, you know, best
well,
picture
she
and the
get
actress.
Some
so it's really
buzz
cool.
With Titan. I think she's the same director, right?
No, it's not.
No, it's not. Really, well, I thought it was.
No,
who
it's
is?
Julia Ducournau.
Okay, it's the J.
Yeah, no, just like,
yeah.
Justine, she's more, the other film I saw, it's like a, it's also a trial film, but it's like a sex comedy more. That one would be even weirder if it was nominated. This one, I mean, it's unexpected. It's like welcoming. Like, it's a welcome unexpected thing. But yeah.
It was the Cannes buzz, perhaps.
Yeah, almost certainly.
Maybe the fact that the Academy wants another, you know, woman director. In the
but
amongst
I think
the numbers.
You always gotta do that much.
I'm always a conspiracy theorist, and I'm also thinking,
these
where
women,
are they trying to.
She deserves it,
Maj.
She just deserves it.
Not to say
simple
that she doesn't deserve. She's a great director. I really like the film. What I am suspicious of is merely of the Academy's intentions.
I mean, but
you know?
Like literally every decision that they make, you have to be suspicious of. It's not just when they nominate a woman. When they nominate Killers of a Flower Moon,
no,
just want to seem good to the indigenous
people. I'm suspicious, for example, when Dark Hour gets a nomination.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's
Hour.
What I'm saying. Like their
Darkest
intention,
Hour. Darkest Hour.
The Darkest Hour, or something like that.
Yeah.
The one about Churchill.
Catherine Bigelow, no.
Or
no.
For example, if you want another example, The Green Book. I was suspicious then. Like, it's not a very good film.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, my point is more that all their decisions are like questionable and stupid most of the time. It's like it doesn't really matter, just kind of take
but
it
they
with
have
a
been
of salt.
Making an effort let's
yeah,
give
yeah,
them
that's
that
it.
I mean, they've been looking at what Cannes is doing. They're bringing films from other places, so
haven't they done that before, integrating films that won Cannes or that been at Cannes? I think so.
I mean, no,
makes sense.
Oscars have been like historically American, unless you're saying like the last 10 years, okay, yeah, it's been different. But if you go back more than that, it's not that common. Not like the way it is now.
There has been more representation in American cinema. When you see Everything Everywhere All at Once, or when you see, you know, Past Lives, it's integrating, you know, Korean culture and whatnot. So it's not just the films that come from the outside, it's really films from within that are interested in portraying people from other backgrounds.
But this year, I actually think I'm pretty sort of happy with all films, honestly. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a very sort of not non-deserving film this year. I think it's been generally good. And
Barbie.
Makes sense. Yeah. I think it's.
I think there's
me.
A political side.
The
there,
best
but
film of 2023.
Doesn't.
Yeah,
bother.
I mean, it's
like,
questionable.
But see, that's the difference here, right?
You
guys take the Oscars too seriously. Too seriously.
Okay.
Of course, they're
yeah,
not
you know,
nominating
you know
the best film of 2023. What?
Yeah, it's
you're
like
insane.
The most popular,
the
most politically oriented.
Obviously,
there's always
like
a bunch
Oscars.
Of things.
There's too much at play. Like, it's a ceremony. It's like a lot of bullshit. So in terms of that, I think Barbie makes sense. It's like perfectly acceptable. You know, it doesn't bother me. It's like, and it's a fun film. Like, Poor Things is fun too. Like, if I was going to be totally critical of any, like, I don't think Poor Things deserves a Best Picture nomination for me, but I'm glad it did. Like, I'm happy for that. It's a good film. But is it one of the best of 2023? Probably not. But that's not what the Oscars doing. That's not what they're doing.
How many times do I have to tell you?
How many fucking times? Every fucking year.
Listen, man.
And that's all for today, gang. If you'd like to reach out and suggest a film for the next episode, you can find us on the podcast's official Instagram and Facebook pages. Feel free to subscribe, share this episode, or simply give us a like. That's how our podcast can grow ever more groovy. And if you're on YouTube and want to see more videos like this, check out this next video right here. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
Adios.
Bye, have a beautiful time.